This is Will's Band of the Week for May 1st, 2016. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Anurag from the Ontario Bureau.
Hello everyone.
So, when did we last hear from the Ontario Bureau?
Oh, it's been a while. We were supposed to have a podcast 2 weeks ago.
Right, yep.
When I bailed out at the last minute.
Right, yep.
Sorry about that, by the way.
Yeah, you weren't on probation for too long because we got you right back. Only 2 weeks later, so it was only a minor infraction. We dealt with it behind the scenes. We're not going to disclose, you know, the terms of the suspension, but, you know, you're back now. That's what's important, is you're back now.
Exactly.
And we're glad to have Anurag back. And
I haven't been banished away like Chris, right?
Right, right. Although we decided to let him back last week, so he's going to have to, but he's got to kind of earn his way back to regular appearances.
Correct.
So Barrett and Chris were going to give a live report this week, or Barrett was going to give the live report, but Barrett got busy at the coffee shop. So we'll hear from Barrett probably next week with his review of the Chicago Courtney Barnett show, which I've heard nothing. So
yeah, she's coming around here in Toronto, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Are you going to that one?
Yeah, I've already bought my tickets. So
cool.
Yes.
Good. Not a Kitchener stop,
no,
though.
No, Toronto.
Yeah.
So that's why it requires a lot of planning. So I'm going to start buttering up my wife now and kind of make sure that I have her permission to go away for a few hours.
Yeah. A little less convenient than it used to be for you, right? I mean, you used to be within, what, like less than an hour train ride to Toronto, and now you're like a couple hours, right?
Correct.
Yep. Well, it's still within reach, at least.
It is. It is.
It's almost ironic, though, because, you know, those of us in Madison can get to all these shows in like 10 minutes. and we're
That's
just in
crazy.
We're just in humble Madison. But it's like we were saying, we're just kind of fortunate. We're sort of on the highway between Minneapolis and Chicago. So, and now we've got some good promoters in town. So a lot of bands come through here, which is pretty cool.
That's nice. I mean, over here, I was hoping, like, because this is a student town, I live in Kitchener, but there's Waterloo right next to Kitchener.
Mm-hmm.
And Kitchener is a student town. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. Waterloo is a student town.
Oh.
So I was hoping that there'd be the bands that would come through, but it just doesn't happen. It's very strange. Or maybe I'm just not paying close attention. I don't know.
Yeah, because a lot of college towns get a lot of good bands.
Yeah.
But maybe it just isn't on a convenient route when bands are touring through.
Possibly. Yeah.
Or they need some promoters. Maybe you need to start promoting shows. You could have like a Will's Band of the Week sponsored show in Waterloo.
You know, I have to change the faucet in my house. It's been a 2-week project so far. So forget about, you know, promoting. I can't even take care of my own house. I'm going to start promoting bands.
Yeah, I'm not much of a handyman myself. I had we have a combination lock on our back door, which I think is like the coolest thing. My wife installed it. And then the battery started to go bad. And so then there's a delay. You enter the combination and then there's a delay before it opens the lock. So you know that the battery's low. And it sat there for like a week because I wasn't sure what to do. Then yesterday I just realized all I had to do is unscrew two screws, take a battery out, put another battery in, and screw it back in. It took like 2 minutes. But there was a lot more, like, there was way too much thought put into it. So, yeah, I'm probably not in a position to be booking shows either. We'll just attend them the best we can.
Exactly.
Yep. So
our contribution can only be to pay for the ticket and just enjoy the show. Right,
exactly. So I have a whole bunch of little music news items. I should have little jingles for these things, but I think they're little tidbits that people might enjoy. So one of them is something I just read. Apparently Radiohead, you know, they like to do some kind of odd promo mysterious thing before they release an album, right? They've got a history of this, I think. So just before we started recording, I read this report that they took down their Facebook page or like erased all the content from it, and their website is just blank and like everything's gone blank. So, you know, it's like the Apple Store before the new iPhone comes out, right? So probably they've got something in the works. So we might have a new Radiohead album by the time people listen to this. And as there was a report, I think like a month ago, that they might be coming out with a new album. And I was talking to Barrett, and my comment was, I just hope they have real drums on it and not a whole bunch of clicking sounds. That's my reaction to Radiohead lately. Too many clicking sounds. Got to get back to some real drums.
Yeah.
So
I did hear something about them distributing some, I don't know if it's newsletters or was it stickers? Hmm. Burn the Witches. That's all I heard.
Yeah.
So, yes. There's something going on. I think it's suddenly going to come up all of a sudden. Like they released an album, I think, the last one, In Rainbows. Nobody knew about it. They just suddenly announced it. Okay, we have an album, right?
Right, right. Wasn't In Rainbows was the one where they did the pay whatever you want thing too, right? So they were sort of given credit for doing it that way.
I think so, yes.
So wasn't there one in between though? Or was that the last one? They don't really put albums out very often, do they?
No.
Hmm. Well, anyway, we'll find out soon. In other music news, there was a music festival that got canceled. And this was news to me because it's the one that Grant and I went to last year in Austin called Levitation, formerly known as Austin Psych Fest. And last year when we attended, they had some pretty significant storms and heavy rains in like the week leading up to it. So the grounds were really muddy. It was kind of adventurous walking around because you'd be walking through like just thick mud. You know, our shoes were just caked with mud. but they got through it fine. But this year, as it was approaching, they got forecast for really severe thunderstorms, and they were really worried about the safety factor. So this is a Thursday through Sunday festival, and on the Friday through Sunday, and on Thursday late afternoon, they just said, canceled. They sent this thing out, and it's like they had people from all over the place who had flown in, you know, and they're already there, and then they had to cancel it. So it's really kind of a terrible thing. And then of course you're watching the weather, and it's like, boy, it doesn't look that bad. They probably could have gotten it in, you know. But they had they posted a thing that there was an overnight thunderstorm, and they had some tents set up, and it blew them over. So they thought it was probably the right decision. But so then they started rebooking shows. But of course, all the regular venues probably were already booked. So they tried to rebook a bunch of the bands. And then when they did that, the people were trying to buy tickets and the site crashed. And, you know, people didn't get tickets. And so it was kind of a nightmare. But at least some of the bands still got to play. So, but it was a sad thing. And I wonder if that'll affect the future of it, if they... You know, if that's a time of year where they get a lot of bad weather and with those particular grounds, it'll be interesting to see if they keep it at the same location in the future.
Or they could just change the date, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that whole calendar works and how the seasons, and don't know my Texas weather that well, but so we'll see what happens. So that was kind of sad to see. All right. Oh, hey, I've got this.
And now it's time for the Death of the Week.
There was a Death of the Week.
Oh no, who died?
The founder of KTEL.
I have no clue who this is.
Philip Kives. Okay, so you were not... You've got two things going against you knowing what KTEL is.
Mm-hmm.
One is you're probably a little too young. The other is just generally you didn't grow up in North America in the 70s. So KTEL was a company that was, at least by me, most known for KTEL Records. And when I was growing up, they would put out albums of, like, compilation albums of the hits. So, you know, you couldn't down... Did you realize that you couldn't download music back in the 70s? Yeah.
Seems like...
And you couldn't
dark
even...
ages, right?
It's kind of weird, right? So, and, you know, the only way to listen to music by choice was to buy the records. So, you know, that's why they sold a lot of singles, actual physical singles back then. But another thing they did is this company, KTEL, would put out, like, greatest hits albums of just, like, top 40 hits. And it would have, like, 20 songs on an album, be like 10 songs on each side, and they would cram in so many songs that they would have to shorten some of the songs and just fade them out early. So it'd be like, you know, you'd have like some top 40 hit that might have been a, you know, 3.5 minute song. On the KTEL record, it'd be like 2.5 minutes, and they would just fade it out because they didn't have enough room to.
This sounds like more of a North America thing. So. Yeah, I've never heard of this before.
Yeah, so but there's a Canada connection because this guy, I forgot if I mentioned, Philip Kives was his name, was from Winnipeg.
Ooh.
And that's where the whole KTEL, and apparently the company is still around. They do similar kind of, I don't know, it sounds like kind of like huckster type stuff, like as seen on TV.
Oh,
you know, have you seen that stuff? Like, is there like terrible products that just get advertised like crazy? Like there's a knife that they call the feather knife or something like that, where you know, if you've seen the ad on TV where they basically they just touch the top of the tomato and it just miraculously splits in half, you know, that kind of thing. So KTEL went from records to doing, like, you know, kind of bad products, I think. Wow. But it was
sign of the times, huh?
Yeah, but it was just part of growing up, and I'm sure Barrett would remember KTEL Records. You know, they advertised them on TV, you know. You could probably call an 800 number to order it with your credit card or something.
That must be like a boon to people who don't want to buy an album. Yeah, I can,
right.
I can see myself buying it. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yep, they had all the hits.
Okay.
Yep. Philip Kives. All right. Oh, here's my next music news item. I don't know if you saw this, but Pitchfork decided that they should review a bunch of Prince albums that, because they had never reviewed. I mean, Pitchfork didn't exist, I guess, until, when did Pitchfork start? Probably like 2002 or something.
Yeah. So that sounds about right. Yeah.
So the, you know, all the big hit Prince albums were like in the 80s. So they said, well, we should review a bunch of Prince albums. So they reviewed on, Friday and Saturday, 4 Prince albums each day. So they reviewed a total of 8 Prince albums. And the part of it that I think is kind of interesting is the scores that they gave them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What were the scores?
Yeah. Well, 4 of the 8 albums got a 10.
Wow.
And then and the other 4 were like ranging from like 8.9 to 9.2 or something. So... And I don't know about this giving albums a 10 thing. You know, maybe, I mean, I guess you're saying that this is about as good as an album can get, right?
Yeah.
And, boy, I
think,
I don't know.
I think it also, the death probably also played a heavy bias.
Right, right. And then just, I think they gave one or more of the old Led Zeppelin albums a 10. Also, when they went back and reviewed them, so I don't know. Maybe I guess you could justify it and just say, well, we're giving it this score because of the, not only because of the quality of it, but because of the historical significance.
Mm-hmm. Because
they're not giving any current thing a 10. Like the new Beyonce album comes out and everybody raves about it. I'm not sure if Pitchfork's reviewed it yet, but they wouldn't give it a 10 if they love it. You know. If they think it's the best album of the year, usually it gets like a 9.2, right? So I don't know. I guess it's just one of the faults.
By the way,
of the whole...
Pitchfork started in 1996.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's been around 96. For a while.
So, yeah. But I guess that just goes with the territory if you're going to do numerical scoring.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, just a comment on Prince. Like I've explained to you, right, that growing up in India, we had absolutely no access to any music. All we could do was record on video cassettes the Top of the Pops. And any video cassettes that might filter through from some people, somebody coming in from US or England. So we used to watch videos a lot. We didn't really have many cassettes or many albums, so to speak, from, you know, CDs didn't exist back then. They came late in the 90s. So yeah, so Prince was huge, like a revelation, because I was growing up with Wham. Remember Wham?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
with, you know, all these Top of the Pop hits from UK. And they were all very mellow and all really, you know, curated for music for the masses, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
So Prince was just a revelation. Like, it just blew my mind away.
Did was it a content thing where Prince was too controversial, do you think?
Is that... No. It was essentially, there was no market, so to speak. Or that's what every music company must have thought, that there is no market. But underlying all that, there was like a huge market. We used to exchange tapes and video cassettes all the time, every time. Like if you would hear, oh, somebody's coming from US and he's probably got video cassettes. And we would just, you know, go over and just park outside that person's house. Okay, can we come in and see the video cassette? So we used to do that all the time. And so that's how I discovered Prince, and he's been like a huge, huge influence in what kind of music I would start listening to eventually. I mean, I like Pitchfork gave 10 out of 10 to a few of the albums, and I think some of his albums are really good, but this universal acclaim, like he was very erratic, right? Don't you think so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It, like later on, especially after the controversy with Sony, I think, he just became very erratic in his music, so kind of lost flavor, right?
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast that we won't mention because then otherwise people might not listen to us, but they were talking about how Prince, after the whole controversy with the record label, he became his own, you know, he just sold everything himself, he cut out the middleman, but then he also lost his ability to edit, sort of, and he just put out everything, and it, even like some of his closest friends and advisors were like, you gotta like edit this stuff down, but I wonder if just also though, just when he cut out the record labels, I wonder if that's one of the reasons why he wasn't having like hit albums later in his career. Because, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the whole thing of how you get a hit album is you have the record company people in touch with the radio people, and there's this whole kind of line of promotion, right?
Yeah.
If you do it yourself...
That's true. There was no promotion of his music.
And then they were saying it was kind of ironic because, you know, he took total control of the music, and so it's like you have this direct, more direct relationship with the fans, but then he took everything off... You know, nothing was online.
Exactly.
So it's kind of bizarre, right? So, yeah, I guess he was of a generation where he was conflicted about the whole change in the, you know, how music
is
distributed.
Yeah, I think he put out statements that online music will die, or online music is... I mean, he was dead against it because you can't find anything online on YouTube or, you know, Google Music or Spotify.
Right.
I thought, okay, let me go back and maybe buy his albums. I said they've been released for so long, they wouldn't be that expensive. But no, they're right up there, like $10, $12 for each album, that download.
Yeah. I didn't realize that his stuff wasn't online until Barrett and Chris and I were going to talk about him, because it was the day that he died that we were recording the last podcast. And then... Chris had to bring over a thumb drive because he had a bunch of the Prince music because, I didn't even realize it. I just hadn't looked for it. So
okay. No, I was aware of that he had this ongoing battle. Like even Thom Yorke of Radiohead, he's also, I mean, he doesn't do anything about it, I think, but he's also dead against online music. releasing online.
And that's kind of weird, too, that they did that, because they did that whole, you know, pay whatever you want.
Exactly, yeah.
They did the pay whatever you want for the download, but then they had, I remember they had, like, you could buy, like, the $80 deluxe version.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You get the CD, a poster, a T-shirt. Maybe you get tickets to their next show. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think Radiohead is playing some of the festivals this summer, and I think they're playing Lollapalooza in Chicago, which I think has just gone, just from a like an indie rock fan standpoint, it's really gone down because it's just this big pop festival, and they are, so much music that I've never heard of, and I don't know where. There must be some people who know a lot more about music or a lot more bands than I do, because I don't know where they come up with all these bands. So yeah. I think the lineup is really disappointing, but Radiohead is headlining one of the nights, and I've never seen them live. I kind of would like to.
I almost went to one of the shows until I found out that it was in the amphitheater here in Toronto. That's a big theater. I don't want to go to big shows.
Yeah.
Dead against them.
Well, and Radiohead's probably at a point where they're not going to be playing too many small venues.
Exactly, yeah.
Except when they come here and play at like at the Frequency under an assumed name. That'd be cool. I'm sure they'll email the podcast and they'll let us know what their assumed name is so we can
exactly.
See. Yep. All right. Let's see. Oh, this is kind of a small music news item, but you know the band Beach Slang? Did you ever listen to them?
Yeah.
I really, really liked their album last year. And this is one of those unfortunate things where, being an aging rocker, I missed their show about a week ago. They played in Madison, and it was a Sunday night, and there were, I think, four bands, and I was just not feeling the energy to go out and see a band late on a Sunday evening. So I feel a little bit bad about missing it, because I think I would have liked it a lot. Well, about three shows later, around maybe Thursday or so of this week, the story came out that they might have just broken up on stage. They had one of those on stage drama moments.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
Yeah, it was like it looked like it might be a band argument or something. But the guy, the leader, goes up, there's this video. He says into the mic, they finish a song and he says, "We were Beach Slang. Thank you, everyone." And then he tells the club, the person from the club, he says, "Give the people their money back." And then that's the end of the little video. And they're like, "Oh shit." And then then you see the guitar player walk off, and he looks like really dejected. It just looks terrible. and then they thought, well, I guess they might have just broken up. And then like a day or two later, they said, "All right, we're still a band. We're still in it. If you guys are with us, we'll keep going."
So they dissolved it.
Yeah, that's the drama of. And remember, this is the guy who's like 42, trying to live the life of the young person that he never got when he was 20 or something. You know, so you just wonder, like, he's like burning himself out or something. I don't know. Who knows? But that was a little bit of band drama.
Oh,
so
they're really good. I really like the last album.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. And I went back and listened to they had an EP before that that was really good, too. Really, really solid, kind of loud rock band. So I think he quoted The Replacements even when he was, like, commenting about this afterwards. So I'm not sure if you really should try to model yourself after The Replacements, because I think they were kind of self-destructive. But anyway, all right, how about that for music news?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah. You did your homework today, huh?
Yes, I tried to jot down a few things. That's the level of music journalism that I have. I read something and I jot it down.
On a sticky note, right?
Right, something, yeah. The virtual sticky note.
Okay.
You know, there's so many ways to keep notes now, aren't there? Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
It's like if I'm sitting at a desktop computer, then I usually have a file that I just call podcast notes, and I'll jot something down in there. But if I'm not by my computer, then I'll have a reminder app on my phone or whatever. I mean, there's so many ways you can do it now.
Yeah, my preference is still a notebook, but that, like you said, if you're sitting next to your notebook, then it's easy. But
do you mean like a notebook computer or a like a paper notebook?
Like a notebook.
Like a good old-fashioned paper notebook.
Good old-fashioned notebook with a pencil.
Yeah, sometimes an old-fashioned way is a good way, right?
Yeah.
Remember
because
when
I also read somewhere that the best way to remember is to actually write it down.
So you'll remember better if you actually
remember
write.
Better. Huh. Yeah.
Interesting. So remember when the like the predecessor to the smartphone was the Palm Pilot, right?
Oh yeah.
It was a
yeah.
company called Palm, and then the thing was called Pilot, right? And it was like right. a little electronic note keeping device. Is basically mm-hmm. all it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it had a calendar built into it or something. But then, remember, people had those things, and they were like so cool, right? You pull out this little thing. And
it was funny because my wife, she did her education from New York City,
mm-hmm.
and the college that she joined, they insisted that she buy that one.
Interesting.
And, yeah, I think they somehow had this was back in 2006, 2007, that they had an online calendar which they could only port to this device. So that's why they insisted then. So yeah, my wife used to carry that around. I think I have it lying around here somewhere in the basement. I'll go find it now. I'm interested.
Yeah. Yeah. I have like a 5-year-old tablet, like a book reader. I think it's a Nook that I got when I bought a computer for one of my kids, and I got it for free, and I've never used it, and it just sits there, and I'm thinking, I should do something with this thing.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, but then I have to find the charger for it, and I've got this big, I have this big basket full of electronics.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a lot of digging.
I know that one. Yep. I've got a drawer here.
And some of the stuff is like, you know, old modem connectors and old audio cables and stuff, and at times I've actually tried to reduce the inventory to, you know, I'll look at something, I'll be like, this can't possibly be something that I need to use, and then, but then I'll be like, oh god, what if it's the cable for that old video camera, which is the only way that I can play the videos of my kids when they were 5 years old. So then I'm like, oh, that's another project. I gotta find the camera and all the connections for it and the tapes, and then I've got to make them digital, right, and put
them
on the computer.
I have to do that too.
You know, it's like one of those things where I think you could take the tape to like a camera store, but it'd be like $50 per tape or something.
Yeah.
So I really should probably try to figure that out. At least I'm past having to try to put my LPs on. Did you ever do that? Did you ever take like LPs, vinyl records, and digitize them?
No, but I mean the thing that I have right now, the LP player,
mm-hmm.
it does have that option, which allows me. Why would I do that? It doesn't make
right.
any sense, right?
Right. Back when your whole collection was vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
I think it kind of, really I had a big vinyl collection. I didn't want to keep all the records. So at that point, it made sense. But yeah, now, turntables, now if you buy a new one, it's like got a USB connector on it, right?
Uh-huh.
And there's some kind of software that, is there a software that
yep.
divides the tracks by just detecting silence? It must do something like that, right?
Yep.
All the high tech they've got these days.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we have a couple bands to talk about. We should probably do that, right?
We should. It's been, what, half an hour? We haven't spoken about music as yet?
Yeah, something like that. So there's a new PJ Harvey album, and I think it's pretty much a given that it's podcast-worthy when there's a new PJ Harvey album, right?
Correct, absolutely.
And she's now clearly an indie rock veteran, right?
Yes.
And kind of unique in... I don't know. There's really nobody else like PJ Harvey, right?
No,
kind of.
I don't think so.
Kind of sound-wise, and also just sort of career-wise. Seems like she doesn't tour that much. I was telling Barrett that I thought that she could play like a pretty big theater, even in Madison. I think at least 1,000 people would come and see her. Maybe 2,000.
She's touring just the Europe right now, isn't she? Or am I mistaken?
Would kind of make sense, but I don't know. But she's from London, I think, right? I didn't do total music journalism on this, but seems like maybe spend a lot of time in New York. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure about that either. So there's your music. Here, my music journalism is, look it up if you want to find out more about PJ Harvey. But we'll talk about the album. The new album is called The Hope 6 Demolition Project. And that's a housing project somewhere. I think in North America, right?
I think it's the project in... Basically, her album covers a few countries. One of them is U.S. and specifically Washington, D.C. There was... I think there's a ward in Washington, D.C. that she specifically focuses on, and she's taken this title of the album from there. I think there's something called the Hope Demolition Project. So,
all right.
Sixth Demolition Project.
Well, I'll play the first song because it's kind of catchy, and kind of Barrett was noting this. It's kind of poppy sounding for PJ Harvey, but I like it. So,
And I think it's the most melodious of the songs in our whole album right now.
Right. Yeah, I think so. We'll see if the listeners agree. It's called The Community of Hope.
Going to put a Walmart here. So, yep, that's definitely about Washington, D.C.
Yeah, wow. That's kind of like a scathing social commentary, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So, yeah, I just looked it up. It's about some Ward 7 in Washington, D.C. And, yeah, so it's like it's a very, very sarcastic song. I like it. I like it a lot. And like I said, this is like one of the most hummable songs, I guess. That's the term I would use.
Right.
The rest are all fairly jarring, right?
They are, and they're kind of gloomy, and like she'll do like almost like sing-alongs, but they're super gloomy sing-alongs, right?
Yeah, exactly. And she's got this male backing vocals. I think it's the same guy who worked on a previous album, Let England Shake.
Yeah, she's got the same guy she's worked with quite a bit, I think.
Yeah.
But one thing really that struck me, I guess it's always struck me about her, but her voice is just great, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
There's something about the like the frequency range of her voice that it just cuts like in a really cool way, I think. Maybe part of that is just how well they record it, but I think she's got a great voice.
And she can do like the whole gamut of like the whole range, right? She can do a screech and she can do a growl and she can just in one sentence just, you know, vary her voice so well. Yep, I agree with you. It's really good.
So, do you have a pick?
Yep, I've got the first one that she released, The Wheel.
Thank you.
Yep, that's the wheel. Yep. So I don't know what the 28,000 reference is, but it refers to something.
Yeah, I'm not sure too. I think the song's on Kosovo, so probably should look it up before we play it.
Yeah, so we've done incomplete music journalism, but there's obviously things you can explore further about this album. So yeah, and that's a catchy one too. Where it's kind of it's got the gloomy thing, but then it has kind of a catchy chorus. So pretty cool.
It is. So I've seen the video of this too. It's really, really cool. So you should look that up.
I don't watch too many videos, but that it wouldn't surprise me that that would be a good one.
No, I don't too. But when I saw there was a video floating of PJ Harvey, she hadn't released the album yet, so I looked it up.
Right, that was like the first single that they put out, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Yep. Okay, I'll play another one. This is sort of, I don't know, this is kind of typical PJ Harvey, kind of dark, but kind of cool too. It's called A Line in the Sand. She can still hit the high notes.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about, Vish. Her voice just goes from low to high, high to low, without any effort.
Yep, she's not having the problem that Freddie Mercury had when he got older and he couldn't hit the high notes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't think, like Mick Jagger couldn't hit the high notes either.
Yeah.
Maybe it afflicts men more than women. That could make some sense, I guess, with, the way your vocal cords age. For men to hit the high notes, they're extending it a lot, you know. But yeah, she sounds great on that song, I think.
She does, yeah. Excellent number.
Yep. All right, should we play one more?
Okay. How about number two, Ministry of Defense?
Defense stairs and walls are all that's left. Mortar holes let through the air. Kids do the same thing everywhere.
Spray graffiti
in
Yep, that one's that's kind of a classic PJ Harvey, right?
Isn't it? Yeah, I really like that sound that they have going on. Gloomy, dark. It's almost like a military song, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely that one. And some of it has sort of a gloomy saxophone, too. We didn't really highlight the tracks with the saxophone in them, but yeah, so it's really pretty interesting.
It is.
So people should check it out. Indie rock veteran PJ Harvey, also known as Polly Jean Harvey. Right?
Right. Yes.
We knew that much. We did at least that much music journalism.
I do remember her interview from, I don't know, long ago, where she said she grew up in a farm near London where she used to specialize in castrating sheep.
Huh.
I don't know how that popped into my head. I'm going to look this up.
Boy, that's quite...
I think I've heard her interview in one of these talk shows, the late night talk shows.
Wow. Now that's quite that's a history. Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. And then maybe it caused sort of some inner turmoil that inspired the music, right? But she doesn't do like easy pop music, you know? There's always going to be an element, like every album has an element of like difficulty, at least at some point on the album. I remember she did one called White Chalk that was a whole bunch of piano, which was really cool. Like, I want to go back and listen to that again now because it's really different from the rest of her albums.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember really liking it a lot. That's probably like 10 years ago now.
Yeah, so. Okay, I just read this up. It says that she grew up in a family farm in Dorset. So I don't know what the hell that is. You should ask your...
Yeah, we need Craig for that one.
Yeah.
He's probably been to the farm, right?
Yeah.
Probably visited it.
It's the Mecca, right?
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. All right. We've got another one. Thanks to you, Anurag. We're going to talk about the new Tao album. Tao and the Get Down, Stay Down.
Correct. So, been a big fan of Tao, especially their last album, We the Common. And I've been eagerly waiting for a new album. Now, the previous album was more of a, how to put it? It was a collaborative effort, and you could, it was more about, you know, about the world. But this album is a very, very personal album. I think it's about her father, who left her, then came back into her life, and then left her again. So that kind of had some impact. Big impact enough for her to produce an album's worth of songs,
mm-hmm.
all about this relationship with the father. So it's a very good album. To me, it sounds more like, you know, each song is kind of like there's no rhythm to it. It's all stitched together like a controlled chaos kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that really appeals to me. And I cannot recommend this album enough. In fact, I liked it so much, I immediately bought the vinyl too. I'm going to hold on to this for a long time.
All right.
It
reached the vinyl standard. That's pretty good.
It reached the vinyl standard, yes.
All right. Well, let's play a track and then we can talk about it some more.
Sure. Let's start with number 2, Slack Burn.
Oh, ah, ah, ah. Oh, ah, ah, ah.
That's Tao. And the Get Down, Stay Down, the album is called A Man Alive. And yeah, one of the little tidbits, you probably knew this, but it was produced by, or at least assisted by, Merrill Garbus, who also is known as Tune Yards. And it, you can kind of tell, right? I mean, the sound of it is, you know, you can, there's a, I don't know, a similarity with how the Tune Yards albums are recorded, I think. But I think she's a really skilled, she must be really a good studio engineer, because the, like, the drums have this great sound to them. And I think that's kind of an underrated thing. People don't like think,
yeah.
Whenever I say stuff like this, Barrett says, well, you're the geek, you know, I would never have thought about that or whatever. But you know, the way the drums sound can have a huge effect on like the overall recording, and I think they sound really good on this album. It kind of just brings it alive, you know. So to me, it's like, I remember listening to her album from like 10 years ago, like her breakthrough album, and liking it. And then I kind of didn't pay that much attention until this album. And it seems like she's sort of like, it revitalized her a little bit, right? Like, it,
yeah.
Give her some.
I mean, I just listened to her last album in 2013 or 14, I forget.
Uh huh.
And We the Common. And it was a good album, but it didn't really capture, you know, the amazing sound that she has going on now. And I didn't know about this Tune Yards that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a feeling this person has probably influenced her sound quite a lot, because this wasn't the sound she had in the last album, definitely. And this backing band that she has, the Get Down, Stay Down,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's really good. The drumming is, yeah. It, in fact, in each song, it's the drumming that really carries, you know, the whole underlying what do you call it, common thread, so to speak. Yeah, so it's a really good album.
Another
really
tidbit I have is that Tao is originally from Virginia, but is now based in San Francisco. And I think that's where Merrill Garbus is, too, and they're friends. So
okay.
That's cool. It's good to meet people who can produce your album.
Yeah.
So, all right. That was the song I was going to pick. So I have another one I can pick, though. Let's go with track 8, Millionaire.
Daddy, I broke in a million pieces, and that makes you a millionaire. Holy cow, I didn't realize they were so dark.
Yeah.
God.
Wow. Yeah, now I have to go back and listen to the lyrics more carefully, too. Because yeah. I was just kind of gliding along with the melody, and then you pointed out, oh, that was kind of heavy.
It was really heavy. Holy cow, I have to listen to this more carefully now.
Well, you've got the vinyl, so...
Yes, I do have the lyrics on it. Yes, yeah. It'll be cool. Interesting.
Cool. Let's play another one. You have another pick?
Sure, let's play the last one. That is also like just one or two lines, the song. But again, the lyrics are so, so sad. Anyway, it's a nice song.
Okay, it's called Endless Love.
Again, another set of dark lyrics. Endless love, no one can starve. I don't want it, carve it all out of me. Oh my God.
Yep, that's it. Wow. Yep. Yeah, it ties in with the whole story. I heard a little bit about that, the father relationship thing too. So
yeah.
Sometimes you got to do that, and you know the personal album is going to be actually better because you sort of believe in it as you're doing it, right?
So, correct, yeah.
So, yeah, Tao, good solid album. I'm glad it told me to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of things have come out like in the last 2 months. And so I'm actually, a lot of times I'm like, oh man, it's been thin, you know, there's not much to talk about. Now I've got like a whole bunch of playlists. It's like, am I ever going to get around to listening to the Damian Jurado album that came out 2 months ago? I don't know, maybe I will, but you know, but so it was good. I needed direction from you to listen to this. So it's a good one.
It's a good one.
All right. Can we declare ourselves 2 for 2 this week?
Absolutely.
I think so. And I'm sure the listeners are just going to be thrilled with all those great little tiny music news items that I came up with. And I think next week we've got, we'll do a little preview next week. I'm hoping to have Barrett's live report and also a Grant's Underground. Grant's got a couple more bands that people probably haven't heard of, and they're pretty good. I'm going to just tell you that right now.
Yeah, so. I look forward to Grant's Underground. He puts out these, selects these really, really weird and very difficult to listen albums, but once in a while, there's always a gem.
Yeah, I think so too. And then, of course, we'll have to do our 2-hour Radiohead special, analyzing track by track the new album.
Oh, wait, that reminds me. Aren't you going to feature Grant's album on this podcast?
Well, I don't know if he wants that much promotion, but he did. Yeah, he just did put another one out. So,
yeah, if he gets features on this podcast, he's suddenly going to become a millionaire, right?
Exactly, right. He got a review by Canadian website too. So if anybody's interested, if they've been listening this long, it's called Fear of Moose. That's his project, his latest moniker. He was Fear of Moose, and then he was Hollow Tide, and then he went back to Fear of Moose because he liked the name better. So I think now there's some Fear of Moose. Obviously, there's Fear of Moose stuff, and there's also still some Hollow Tide stuff out there. So if you're scouring the internet for new music, you can check that out. So
yes.
Yeah. So, well, thanks, Anurag. I'm really glad you're able to do this, and we'll you know, have you on again in a month or two. Keep the correspondence going. I need to get a hold of Nicholas. So, hey, Nicholas, we gotta get the Australian perspective out here pretty soon.
I guess he must be busy with his son, right? He has a son?
Yes, he does. Yep. Fox.
Fox, sure, yeah.
Kid named Fox.
Name. Wow.
It's bound to keep you busy if you have a kid named Fox, right?
That's true.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Let's sign off and tell people that we'll talk to them again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @willsband. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.